The following podcast of SB Nation Radio is brought to you by BetDSI.com. With the NFL and college football seasons here, it's time to take that pigskin knowledge to the bank at BetDSI.com. With 20 years in the business, an impeccable reputation for great service, fast payouts, and an excellent mobile interface where you can play, win, and get paid, it's a no-brainer. BetDSI.com is the place to go. They have every wager option you could ever want or even imagine. And if you're watching a game, you can use BetDSI's live betting option to bet on the fly. Whether it's the NFL, college football, Major League Baseball, the NBA, the UFC, esports, global sports, or even politics, celebrities. I mean, really, it doesn't matter. Whatever you feel like betting on, BetDSI has it for you. You get started today with BetDSI, you can get some extra bang for your buck, too. They're offering double your money for your first deposit. That's right, deposit to start winning and get up to $2,500 free. That's double your money right from the get-go. So what are you waiting for? Double your bankroll right now by joining BetDSI.com and use promo code NATION101. The games are more fun when you get paid, so play at BetDSI.com. That's BetDSI.com and use promo code NATION101.
This is SB Nation AM.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver. Here's Tony D.
All right, glad you've been with us here on a Thursday. SB Nation AM, SB Nation Radio. LeBron James passing Michael Jordan last night. Fourth all-time in the NBA scoring list. Always brings up a LeBron-Michael Jordan debate. It's a fun thing to do. It's a fun sports conversation that people kind of like to have. I think it's massively overdone, but nevertheless, it's still there. But make no mistake, I think LeBron's comments last night about passing Michael Jordan, what Michael Jordan meant to him as a player, I think he nailed it out of the park. I think what he said about MJ and his legacy, what it meant to him as a kid to be like Mike, to go play basketball, to mimic the things that Michael Jordan was doing. I think a lot of NBA players, I think a lot of basketball players, like a lot of players who just anybody who ever picked up a ball around that time would say the exact same thing. And it means a little bit more when because it's LeBron James, a guy that we've been seeing in the league now for a very, very long time, passing Michael Jordan on the scoring list. I did have a problem with, you know, not really a problem per se, but I did kind of raise my eyebrow when he said that passing Michael Jordan was you know, on top of his accomplishments as much as winning championships. I think it's a little, I hope it's not true, because I think winning a championship at Cleveland was a big deal to a lot of people, and I think it's a bigger deal rather than a personal scoring mark that he was probably going to get anyway, given the fact that he had some longevity in the league and wasn't looking to slow down. But nevertheless, it does remind you that whether or not this is a torch that is being passed or what, however you want to poetically describe it, whether it's everything or nothing, because the Michael Jordan fans are always going to point out that Michael got his in much, much less games than LeBron did. But the reality of it is always good when you see the different generations come together, especially when the younger generation is honoring the older generation for everything that they've done. You see this in golf occasionally, where, you know, you see top golfers paying tribute to guys who paved the way in something, right? You'll see it this week when players play at the Arnold Palmer Invitational, how much Arnold Palmer meant to them, even if Arnold played way before that they were born. LeBron knew Michael Jordan, watched Michael Jordan, wanted to be Michael Jordan. He's now past Michael Jordan on the scoring list, and I think he did it. He said all the right things last night in his praise for the legacy of Michael Jordan.
Boom, boom, acalaca-laca, boom.
It's Thursday, which means it's Throwback Thursday on SB Nation AM. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
We are throwing back to 1989, the anniversary of the Milli Vanilli album that was busted out. This is Walk the Dinosaur. Who did this song?
Was.
This was a terrible song, but yet very catchy. What a dumb song this was.
Was this a dance that people did? Because I don't remember it.
I don't know. I'm struggling to try to figure this out.
How is this a hit? Yeah, walk the dinosaur? What are they doing? No,
just open the door, get on the floor, walk the dinosaur.
How do you walk a dinosaur? They got small arms. Or at least tight T-Rex does. A stupid song. But it was the 80s. What do you want from
it? It was the 80s. This was a chart topper.
We fell for two singers that didn't know how to sing. Okay? God. Oh, I love
either,
that.
We were either walking the dinosaur or walking like an Egyptian back then. It didn't matter.
Yeah.
Straight up.
Before the tragic death of one of the Milli Vanilli singers, did they do a spoof commercial or something?
Yes, I think they did.
I think they did. I think they spoofed themselves in an ad for something before. It was pistachio nuts or something like that. But I think before one of them died, they spoofed themselves. That's the only thing you could do. At some point, you have to just make fun of yourself. Oh, yeah. Yeah, we tried to scam everybody.
It was for carefree sugarless gum.
Did they really? Carefree sugarless gum. I'd love to be in the ad pitch for that. Okay, here's what we're going to do. You're going to chew this gum and pretend you can sing. Or you're going to chew this gum and pretend you can't sing. Whatever. That's awesome. Yeah, Milli Vanilli, 30 years ago, releasing their album. So
here again, you want to hear the...
Remind me of this little ditty.
I'm not sure what's going on here, but we'll figure this out as we go along.
How long will the flavor of carefree sugarless bubble gum last?
So they're singing this?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
How long? Till these guys sing for themselves.
They don't even say the name.
No, but did you hear the punchline at the end? How long will carefree sugar-free gum last? As long as these guys start singing for themselves.
Right.
Because so at the very end, the record is skipping.
Ah, I got it. That's good. So I jumped the gun on that. Oh, that's good. Milli Vanilli. Gracious. Do you hear what Charles Barkley said about Kyrie Irving? This is really good. Charles Barkley, love him or hate him, you have to admit, he's one of the most honest guys in media. You may disagree with what he says, but at least he says what he wants to say. He doesn't try to hem hot or tries to get on somebody's good side, or he doesn't do that thing where it's like, well, it could be good or bad. We won't really know. Like, he gives you an opinion. Like, this always bothers me when we talk to people who are, you know, in the know in a sport, and you go, where do you think so-and-so is going? Or what do you think about this trade? And you go, well, we'll have to wait and see. I'm asking you your opinion on what you think the trade is going to do. And Charles Barkley's not like that. Charles doesn't go, well, we'll see. I guess it could work. It may not work. He's like, no, that's terrible. Oh, that's awful. That guy stinks. So anyway, Kyrie Irving is just miserable. Absolutely miserable. So Adam Silver was was speaking at a sports analytics conference at MIT, and Adam Silver said, quote, when I meet with them, meaning the athletes, what surprises me is that they're truly unhappy. A lot of these young men are genuinely unhappy. And I think it's less calculated than a lot of people think. The reality is that most don't want to play together. They're enormously jealous among our players. If you're around a team in this day and age, there's always headphones on. They're isolated and they have their heads down. So Barkley was asked about this on ESPN, and this is what he said. He said, and I love this. I got to be honest with you. I love this. He said, I think that's probably the stupidest thing I've ever heard Adam say. That's the stupidest thing I've ever heard any commissioner say. So think about what he just said right there. There's more to it, but he just said, that's the dumbest thing Adam Silver said. And not only that, it's the dumbest thing I've ever heard any commissioner say. He goes, these guys are making 20, 30, $40 million a year. They work 6-7 months of the year. They stay in the best hotels in the world. They ain't got no problems. That's total bogus. And let me tell you something else. Kyrie Irving, I don't know him that well. Seems like a good kid. But I've never seen a person so miserable. To have so much success, to have the world in the palm of his hands, he's going to make $40, $50 million a year for the next 10, 15 years. He's already won a world championship. He's in movies, but he's got to be one of the most miserable people I have ever seen. He wanted to go to Boston because he wanted to have his own team. And what a lot of these guys don't understand is when you're the star, and I've been a star, you get all the credit, but you get all the blame. That's right. It ain't fair, but that's how it is. That's a great quote. That is one of the most powerful things Barkley has said, and Barkley has said some powerful stuff. He's taking this, oh, woe is me, woe is us. Oh, Adam Silver wants to get down and get all feely as to why these guys are miserable. And Barkley's like, no, no, no. They're rich. They have the best pampered life you can imagine. That is unbelievable that they're miserable. No, no, no. They got no problems. This is bogus. Kyrie is just miserable. He's just miserable because that's who he is. Not for any other reason than that's who he is. It's good stuff by Barkley. Barkley's always been one of those guys that, again, he's not a fan favorite. There are things where I hear him say stuff and I go, oh man, come on. It's not that simple or it's not that complicated and all that other kind of stuff. But sometimes he nails it. He absolutely nails it. And I think this time he did. I think he hit this one out of the park.
What he's saying is very true.
Very true.
I mean, Kyrie is just, I don't get what his deal is right now.
I don't either.
I mean,
I don't understand.
He's essentially on top of the world. I mean, he looked, whether you want to or not, I mean, one of the best players in the East. Hands down. And, you know, and for him to like start denying, like, oh, I don't want fame. I don't want all this attention. It's like you brought it on yourself.
Yeah, exactly.
You got to reap the repercussions of what you created.
And he walks by the media and he's like, I can't wait for this stuff to be over. Like he you're absolutely right. But in reality, I mean, this is a guy that has known ever since he got into this league, he's had a pampered existence.
Yes.
Like you don't even begin to understand how these guys live when they travel, for example. I mean, they get on these planes that, I kid you not, are gutted out so that it could fit them. The whole plane, the whole 747 or 57 or whatever it is, the whole plane is gutted and brought these luxury seats, spacious seats that they can relax in. They're not crammed in because they're 6'7" and they, fitting on coach. There's a buffet of food.
They're not staying in like, the same hotel rooms you and I get to stay in.
Yeah.
We're like, oh my God, look, there's a Bible.
It's unbelievable.
We get excited about the littlest things. Like we're excited. Like, I get excited if the hotel room I booked has a couch in it and I didn't know it was there. I'm like, oh my God, it's not comfortable. It's like, man, this is a suite compared to what they stay in, and especially someone at his caliber.
There was a guy that wrote a book called Can I Keep My Jersey? His name was Paul Shirley. He got in a little controversy. He said some things that were a little off. But before that, he had written this book called Can I Keep My Jersey? And basically, he was a basketball player. I think I want to say he played at Kansas, but I'm not 100% sure, or Iowa State or something like that. He played and he bounced around these minor leagues, right? He played in the CBA, he played in Spain, he played, any league that he could continue to play basketball. He just kept playing. But every now and then he would get a 10-day contract. So every now and then he would be like playing for Winnipeg or something. He'd be in Grand Forks and it'd be snow and he'd be staying at this motel. And then the general manager of the team would call him up and go, hey, you got called up by the Atlanta Hawks. You got to get to the airport. And he said, I did an interview with him and he said, man, he goes, you pack your bags. You don't see your bags again until you get to the hotel. Like you literally get on a plane in Winnipeg or wherever, and you don't see your bag again. They take your bag and they take it to the hotel and you're staying in this 5-star. He goes, you go on road trips. There's food, buffet, everything you want. They hand you wads of cash every day when you're on the road for per diem. He goes, these guys are living the life. And Barkley is at least calling it out. Like a lot of athletes are a little embarrassed about that kind of aspect. So what happens is, they want to pretend like somehow they have a struggle too, right? Like if you're struggling to pay the bills, well, they may not have to struggle to pay the bills, but they struggle with something else. Like you may not really like your job. You may love your career, but you may not like where you're at, right? Well, they want to relate to that. Like maybe you're an architect that loves being an architect, but you don't currently love the company you're working for, right? Well, they want to relate to you in that capacity. Like I love being a basketball player, but I don't like playing for the Charlotte Hornets, right? That kind of thing. So they're always trying to relate to you. They're always trying to figure out a way. I can't have it this good. Is it real? Is it like this? And some get that mindset that somehow they've got to, I don't know, they've got to somehow complain about something. And Barkley's at least calling out that mindset. You have nothing to complain about. You've won life's lottery, right? The genes you were born with have allowed you to make $20, $30, $40 million a year and put yourself in a position where you're working 6-7 months out of the year and your whole life is one pampered journey, right? Best hotels, best food, anything you want, whenever you want, at any moment you want it is available to you. And you have nothing to complain about. You don't have anything to be miserable about. And I like that about Barkley because at least he's saying what many of us have always believed. Why are you so miserable? You want miserable? Try working 3 jobs to keep food on the table. That's miserable. Not this whole idea of making $40 million playing basketball.
Or, keep it in his profession. How long would he last in the G League? I can't remember the guy's name, but the guy who ended up coming on for the Lakers last season, who like spent his entire life in the G League, and I'm pretty sure he's back down in the G League, but he had his one shot in the NBA, and he had a team high points scored. I mean, he was like the hero of the day, but I wish I could remember the guy's name. But I mean, he did. He was one of those guys. I mean, it's like a minor league baseball player. They spend their entire career in the minor leagues and maybe get their one chance to call up. And finally live that life of luxury, and they're grateful for it.
Yeah, grateful.
And I think that's the problem with Kyrie, because Kyrie he was a stud in college, probably was pampered in college, probably had everything in college, and then comes into the NBA as a first-round pick and immediately is living the life of luxury.
Yep, and not only that, right? You're talking about the guys who come up and then have to go down?
Yeah.
Right? So they come up and they eventually go down. Like those guys, man, it's got to stink when you're in the NBA for 10 days and then you get sent back to minor leagues and you're riding the bus and staying in motels and you're getting $20 a day for food. And then all of it. But for a guy like Kyrie, he's never going to ever experience that.
Never.
He's never going to know that life is not going to be taken away from him until he takes it away, or maybe injury stops his career. But even then, he'll still make a fortune.
Yeah, the hardest thing.
But he's never going to know what it's like to ride a bus and live in motels, playing basketball in front of 10 people. Never.
The hardest thing he's had to endure is watching the finals at home.
Yes, exactly.
And even then, I mean, for a while there, he wasn't even doing that.
Exactly. Totally. So good for Charles Barkley on this. 800-777-2907. It's SB Nation AM.
It's Thursday, which means it's Throwback Thursday on SB Nation AM. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, it's SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio. This is the Traveling Wilburys as we celebrate 1989. Wasn't this a group? It was
it's as if
musicians, Roy Orbison, Tom Petty.
Yeah, it's as if musicians decided to create an all-star team.
Yeah, it really was. Bob Dylan. Yeah, it was a bunch of them. Doing a repair that needs a special tool? O'Reilly Auto Parts makes it easy with the Loaner Tool Program. Over 80 specialized loaner tools are available, so O'Reilly is sure to have the tool in stock to help you get the job done. Please purchase the needed parts and then put down a deposit on the loaner tool. Return the tool in the original condition and receive a full refund. O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day. Yeah, they were a good little band. They were good. It was fun. That was a good group.
The list was George Tom Harrison.
Petty. Oh, George Harrison was in this. That's right.
Jeff Lynne. Tom Petty, Bob Dylan, Roy Orbison.
That's right. Okay.
So what? It was as if a group decided, let's create a little all-star team and see what happens with it.
God, good gracious. That was great. Traveling Wilburys. 1989, in celebration of Millie Vanilli's album being released.
In celebration.
We are celebrating Millie Vanilli's album being released. Can you get Millie Vanilli's album? That's a question I want to know. Can you, you know, you can go to like, well, they don't really, do they have record stores anymore? But like, if I go to iTunes, can I get Milli Vanilli songs?
Funny, you should ask. Yes, you can, because when I was researching, doing a little bit of research yesterday, that's where I was going to preview songs and listen to
okay.
it. You cannot buy 1989's Girl You Know It's True album, but you can get like the Greatest Hits album.
Okay, that's good.
Because remember, they released more than one album.
They did. That's right.
Whether or not they sang on these albums, you know, remains debatable. But they have, they did release more than one album.
Again, the album was released 30 years ago today, which is why we're celebrating on a Throwback Thursday. But I have another question. Given that so they made all this money, right? They were making money like any rock star would. They were going on tour. They were making appearances, all that stuff. So when they were found out to be a fraud, did they have to give the money back, the royalties back? And then wouldn't they get paid for something for their services, given that, okay, they may not have sung, but they danced, they performed, they lip sank. Could they still make, did they have to give all the money back, or were they allowed to keep some of it? I wonder what the legal entanglements were for Milli Vanilli when it was all getting sorted out. Like, they weren't left with nothing, were they? Like, I mean, they were doing something for the company. It wasn't their idea. This was a record company's idea. This was a record producer's idea. They were part of it, and they were at fault, don't get me wrong, but those two didn't conjure it up.
No, they didn't. I mean, in the way they did, because Fab Morion or Morvan, whatever his name, or Farian, or I'm not sure which one.
Right.
They did try to pay the singer off by the grand sum of $150,000.
They were trying to pay the original singer off?
Yeah, his name was Charles Shaw.
Oh God, no. I wouldn't go to a meeting with them for less than $1 million. If I was the original singer of those songs that were hits?
Yes.
I wouldn't sit down at the table for anything less than $5 million.
Farian was the manager.
Okay.
Yeah, he was the creator of the group.
And he sang the songs?
No, he was the founder of Milli Vanilli. Okay. The singer was Charles Shaw. And so,
If I was Frank, Charles Shaw,
his name was Frank Farian. He was the one who tried to pay off Charles Shaw.
No, for $150,000.
For $150,000 to keep
him
quiet.
That's ridiculous. You know what? You want to keep him quiet, you set him up for the rest of his life. Are you kidding me? You make it so he has no incentive to ever come out. You make it so that you pay him so much money that he's almost complicit in this scam because he accepted so much money. Are you kidding me? What's wrong with this guy?
I mean, yeah.
Do you know how this works?
Yeah. If he was smart, I would have said, hey, I'm going to pay you exactly what they're making, and let's just keep this gravy train rolling. You just keep quiet. You just be the behind-the-scenes guy. Maybe he didn't have the right look.
Yeah,
he had the voice but not the look. Where Milli Vanilli, I mean, they were good-looking guys, and they got the look, they got the star appeal and the sex appeal. Let's just, you got to be smart about this, man. Keep that gravy train going.
They need to learn from the mafia. This is how the mafia gets away with everything, because they pay people off in such a way that those people would never ever come forward with the fact that they were getting paid off, right?
That or always threatened to sleep with the fishes.
That's true. That is true.
There's
always an act of violence that's always attached to that. Yeah, it's very true. But like when the mob pays off politicians, they give them so much money that politician would never go, hey, I'm going to go to the press and I've been being paid off by you. You give them so much money that he's almost as problematic with the crime that he's overlooking or the crime that they're perpetrating. Right. This is what you do. You're committing a fraud against the world public in music. But you make sure this guy is so taken care of. He would never open his mouth. God, $150,000 go away. Good God, people. Come on. Take a class. Be good. Be good with this, man. That's crazy. Dave Marciano is going to join us from Wicked Tuna, that television show. It's back.
I got to add something else real quick. I'm sorry about Milli Vanilli, because I'm reading up on their life story right now. March 1990 issue of Time magazine, Rob Pilatus, who's one of the, I don't know if he's Milli or Vanilli.
Right.
was quoted proclaiming himself to be the new Elvis.
Oh!
Reasoning that by the duo's success, they were more talented musically than Bob Dylan, Paul McCartney, and Mick Jagger.
Oh! Well done! done.
Oh yeah, that won't get people coming at you.
That is swimming right in the middle of that. That is well done. Let it go.
And this was already after that lip syncing concert.
Oh, he said it afterwards?
Oh, yeah. This was in 1990, in a Time magazine, in a March 1990 issue. That lip syncing concert where the record was skipping happened in July of 89.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, my fun. It's funny. The record is skipping. They're still singing.
Girl, you know it.
Looking at each other like,
Well, I guess it was, says here, they continued to pretend to sing and dance on stage for a few more moments. Then they both ran off stage.
Yeah, of course. You can only do that girl you know it so many times.
And do that same dance. Remember, it was like that, you know, where they rocked their legs back and forth and something. I don't know.
We didn't have advanced stereo CD techniques to avoid the skipping part.
I think
Milli Vanilli concert.
But Tony, remember, you get the true sound from vinyl.
You get the true, right, exactly. Oh, this is good. All right, I can't wait for this next one. Dave Marciano is going to join us from Wicked Tuna. That is an amazing, amazing job. And Wicked Tuna does a good job of capturing life on the seas, fishing for bluefin. But anyway, new season's coming out. We'll talk to him about it coming up next. It is Tony D, Ron Culver. It is SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
It's Thursday, which means it's Throwback Thursday on SB Nation AM. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Celebrating 1989 on Throwback Thursday, Paradise City by Guns N' Roses. National Geographic, a new season of Wicked Tuna is underway. It'll start Sunday, this coming Sunday, this weekend. Dave Marciano joins us. He is the captain of the Falcon. He used to be Hard Merchandise, but now he's got a new boat. How are you, Dave?
Good, thank you. Yourself?
Good. Do I have to call you captain? I'll call you captain because you deserve that title, man. That's awesome.
Well, yeah, you don't have to. I mean, for me, that's one of the adjustments from being part of the show. They stick that label on us, you know. And as my career as a fisherman, you know, generally in the commercial industry, we work as a team. We don't run around being expected to be called captain. But I do appreciate it if you do so.
All right. So, Captain, tell us about the new boat. Why did you go with the new boat? And what is it going to bring to the new season of Wicked Tuna?
Well... Look, new is a relative term, right? The Hard Merch was built in 1984. My new boat, quote-unquote, was built in 1986.
I got you.
So it's still a 40-plus-year-old boat, but it does got a little more speed, and we have a little bit more comfort. So hopefully, you know, that's going to be an edge for us to give us a better competitive edge, you know, on some of the other boats in the show.
I gotta tell you this, Dave. I've done radio for a long time, and I think if I took you into this industry, I think you could do it, and you could handle it, and you'd be successful at it. Dave, if you gave me 1,000 lifetimes, I could not do what you do for a living. I have so much respect for what you guys are doing on the seas. Was there ever any doubt in your mind when you were young that this was what you were going to be doing with your life?
No, I really don't think so. Look, I'm the first of my family to be a fisherman. My father sells insurance, you know, and he owns an insurance company that he worked for, you know, his whole life. And my older sister, my younger sister went to college, and they're being groomed to take over the company. His dad retires here very soon. And fishing, for me, was just, you know, since I was a kid, I took to the water. And it started out just like a lot of folks, you know, just fishing, you know, in general, with a rod reel. And, you know, then life happened, and I got married, we had kids, and I wound up, you know, in the commercial fishing end of things, you know, just to make more money. So fishing has always been that passion for me.
That's fantastic. Wicked Tuna, again, returns to television this Sunday on a new season on National Geographic. Captain Dave Marciano joins us here on SB Nation Radio. Do you think the show does a very good job of conveying your everyday life on the water and the struggles that you guys have, finding fish, catching fish, getting paid for the fish, and everything that you guys go through?
Yeah, I think the show, you know, is a fairly accurate representation of the real world of the bluefin tuna fisheries. When you look at all the characters in general, you know, those are the types of participants in the show. Obviously, we're not the only boats out there. I'm sure people realize that. So what you're seeing on the show is just a small snapshot of our lives, right? And,
right.
And for what it is, for a one-hour TV show, I think it does a very good job at kind of giving the viewers, like yourself, you know, a peek into the world of the fishing industry. I think it does a very good job at that.
Do you find as your fame has grown, as the show's popularity has grown, do you have people, young people, come up to you and say, I want to do this. I never thought about doing this, but I kind of like fishing and I want to know more about what you're doing.
Yeah, we actually do. I've had that quite a few times, you know, in emails and stuff. And what I tell my kids, look, I tell them, if you look at Dave on the .com, right, that's how you really become successful fishing these days. Just like my kids, I told them, get your degrees, you know, go to college, get your degree, have that other type of career. Because the reality is fishing has changed from when I graduated high school. Like a lot of us in the industry, us older folks understand, you know, when we graduated high school, if you were willing to work a sweat in the fishing industry, you know, if you didn't mind getting dirty, if you didn't mind working hard, you could make plenty of money fishing. But, you know, as the world has changed and we, you know, we have regulations in place to protect all the fish resources, not just tuna, that's, you know, that storyline goes into effect with all the species of fish here in this country. You know, the world has changed and fishing really is a part-time industry these days, you know, because of all that. So to really be successful, you want to be kind of like Dave on the .com. You have a career, another career to kind of back up your fishing career. That's really the best way to be successful.
You talk about some of the characters on the show on Wicked Tuna. Again, we're talking to Captain Dave Marciano of the show, which premieres the new season on Sunday on National Geographic. Tell me about Tyler on Pinwheel, because he comes from Rye, New Hampshire. I'm a New Hampshire guy, and I know one thing about Rye. They got a lot of Benjamins in Rye. I mean, there's a lot of money up there.
Yeah. Yeah, look, Tyler, you know, look, what can I say? He's a little bit abrasive at times, but you know what? In a lot of ways, he reminds me of myself. You know, when I got my first boat, I think I was 23 when I bought my first boat. And, you know, I was in a similar sense, you know, I wanted to go show all the guys who I fished with on deck that I could do this too. And I wanted to make a name for myself. So we never came home, and we fished hard, and I went out there and made that name for myself. Now, it was different times. Granted, believe it or not, you know, I had hair down to my shoulders. I had a baseball cap, but the brim was curled, and my jeans were pulled up all the way. So it's just a little bit of a generational thing with Tyler.
Dave, I always want to know this. How long do you guys go out for? When you leave dock and you go out fishing, how many days are you out there before you kind of have to come back and regroup?
Anyway, it's like when we gear up for a trip, we're basically ready to stay out for, you know, 3 to 5 days, depending on weather. And that way, look, my philosophy has always been, look, if we go out and find fish, we've got enough supplies in the boat to do, you hear us talk about turn and burns. We can just come in, unload, and go right back out without getting any more fuel or food or ice. And if not, after 4 or 5 days out there, if you can't get things together, if you can't find any fish, it's time to come in, take a couple days off, you know, regroup your head, try and get a little intel, you know, find out, see if anybody else is seeing fish or hearing where the fish are, and then go back out and hit it again. So I guess on average from 3 to 5 days would be the short answer to your question.
Dave, have you ever had a moment where you watched the show? Do you watch the show, by the way? Do you see yourself on TV, or do you stay away from that?
Oh, yeah. Look, since it's come out, for my whole family, Sunday nights are like Super Bowl Sunday, you know, at my sister's house primarily. She's got, you know, 2 or 3 of the big TVs in several rooms, right? And we go, and the family and friends get together, and we bring a bunch of food, and we all watch the new episode. You know, for my family, it's been... you know, a fun little thing to do.
And overall, are you pleased with how you're portrayed, or have you ever had to call the producers and go, you know that's not what I was talking about in that conversation?
No, no, look, we understand they have the ability to edit how they see fit, right? So, look, this isn't scripted, but it is edited. They come, they film the boat, you know, they're on the boats for almost 2 months, and they film the season, and then they go back to L.A. and, you know, break it up into episodes. So we have no say when how they choose to edit things. But like I will say, you know, like every year I tell myself, you know, I kind of got this reputation now, you know, it seems like at least once a year I have these little meltdowns on the boat. And every year, look, I'm a human just like you guys, right? And I tell myself when they put the cameras on, okay, I'm not going to let it happen. This year, I'm not going to blow up on film. I'm going to make sure I don't lose my cool while they're filming this season. And ultimately, we reach that point every year. You add in, you know, real life where, you know, you've been up for 24 hours or 36 hours. Nothing's going your way. And you stub your toe that one final time, and you have your little meltdown. Now, you know, some people, you know, kind of relate to that. So it's been my thing. But it's just funny because every year I tell myself, I'm not going to let it happen. I'm not going to do it this year. Because, look, I'm not proud of those moments. When I run around like a lunatic throwing smashing stuff, right? I mean, I'm not proud of that. But, like, you know, and I think, like, that's the phenomenon why people watch reality TV, right? Because I think people, in general, we all have moments in our lives that we're not proud of, right? And when they capture one of those moments, again, because my goal every year is to not let it happen, but ultimately when it does, you know, that's real. You know what I mean? Like, if they tried to script it and said, hey, we're going to have you do that, this is what we want you to do that episode, you guys would see right through it. I'm not an actor. So when that happens and I lose my cool, that's as real as it gets right there.
Dave, that is great stuff. Captain Dave Marciano, I do want to ask you one quick question about Gloucester, because like I said, I'm from New England. I'm from New Hampshire. I know that area. I've been to that area. Listen, most people who know that area, either they watch your show, maybe they saw that movie, The Perfect Storm, where the guys are like, oh, we Gloucester men, you know, that kind of thing. But fishing in that area, how important is it? How much of a lifeblood is that industry to that area of the country?
Oh, look, in Gloucester, let's face it, Gloucester has over a 400-year history of fishing. You know, Gloucester was fishing when the nation was founded. You know what I mean? It was been a crucial part. Cod in New England. I mean, in the State House up in Boston, with this, you know, a 6-foot giant gold codfish that hangs in the State House because, look, salt cod back in the day when this country began, you know, salt cod was a commodity. Salt cod was one of those reasons, you know, this country was able to be founded and be, a part of that fabric of the colonial days where salt cod helped us make this country what it is. So it's a huge part of Gloucester's heritage.
Captain, I really appreciate your time. Good luck with the show. It's always fun to watch it. A National Geographic Wicked Tuna Sunday, the new season begins. Always good talking to you. Always good watching you on TV, my friend.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much. Have a great day.
You too. Captain Dave Marciano of Falcon. Used to be Hard Merchandise, which I always thought was a great name for a boat. Hard Merchandise. I don't own a boat. If I owned a boat, I have no idea what I would name it. I maybe just name it Boat. I can't think of a cool name. I think all the cool boat names have been taken. I would end up with a terrible name. But that's a good show. That's a fun show, Wicked Tuna. It's Tony D and Ron Culver. It's SB Nation AM.
It's Thursday, which means it's Throwback Thursday on SB Nation AM. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Milli Vanilli, 30 years ago, they released an album. Was this Girl I'm Gonna Miss You?
Yes, it was.
Yeah. God.
Every junior high dance for me.
Completely.
Literally the only song I think I ever danced to in junior high.
Throwback Thursday. I love it. This whole show brought back a lot of memories.
No, like I said to you during the break, I said I wish we could go 8 hours because there's a lot more songs. We're gonna have to revisit. Oh, yeah. We got to revisit 89 down
you
the road.
You didn't even do My Prerogative. No, I didn't.
There's just too much to choose from.
We out of here.
You should have seen a lot.
Everybody's talking.
There were a lot that I left on the table. Yeah. It was very sad.
Very sad. A lot. We got a lot of Throwback Thursdays coming. So we'll see. We'll do that again. We'll find some other way 89 is represented.
No, there's got to be. I mean, I left, there's Bon Jovi, Erasure had a hit, The Bengals, Eternal Flame. Come on now.
Yeah, come on now. It's right. On this date, just a couple years ago, Peyton Manning announced his retirement from the NFL. It's this anniversary. He announced, set up the podium, announced his retirement from football. Good Monday Night Football fit. I know he turned the job down, but are we waiting for Manning to make his broadcast debut?
No.
Calling games?
No, we just wanted to keep putting on Nationwide commercials.
Do the commercials. The commercials are great. How is he so blessed to be good at playing NFL quarterback and being funny and ads?
It's kind of. Not just ads. I mean,
just in general.
Saturday Night Live. It's one of the greatest skits on Saturday Night Live history.
Of all time. So funny for a guest host.
And it's not fair. I don't see him. I don't think he would do well in a movie.
No, I don't think he would do well in a movie either.
I could see him in a sitcom though.
I could see him in a sitcom. I should get into it. He should get into that. There's got to be a pilot somewhere. Somebody's got a pilot.
Yeah, not being one of the main characters. I mean, if you threw in like a show similar to like Cheers.
Okay.
Where they're just kind of hanging out in one location. I'm not saying a bar. Maybe, it's a coffee shop. Not a coffee shop. That's already been done. But, some place where they can all just hang out. And he's just a reoccurring character.
Okay.
Kind of like Norm.
I actually got an idea here. Hold on. He's a lead. It's a sitcom. He's a lead. He's a former NFL quarterback, but he's not Peyton Manning level. He's a journeyman quarterback. He's made enough money, but he was never a superstar. And he's adjusting to life as a post-career football player. He's being asked to go to his high school to speak at a high school graduation. He's like a card signing. Like he's not a big star. It would be hard because he's Peyton Manning. He's not a big star. He had a good career, but not a great career. But he's got kids and a wife who's got a career, and he's staying home. And he's Peyton Manning. He's doing the Peyton Manning thing that he does in the commercials.
And he owns a car dealership.
Maybe that's the case.
It always seems like these guys will end up owning a car dealership.
Own a car dealership or a restaurant where they talk about the good old days.
Yep.
Right?
I like that.
So he's dealing with those things where they're like one episode, like his manager calls him up and it's like, hey, they want you to appear at an opening for a department store. And he gets there and
he's always being pressured to coach the high school team. And he's like, no, I don't want to do that. I want to just be a fan.
I would watch this. I would watch a sitcom where he's that kind of character because he's funny. He's really funny. But on this date, he announced his retirement in 2016. SB Nation AM.